right, now that I know what we're going to talk about, it is really hard for me to hold back.
So you're going to swear.
Well, maybe
you
should do the introduction because the F word is the best word in the whole wide world.
Yeah,
it really is.
It
so is. It can, you know, be happiness or anger or satisfaction or... Let's just get to Professor.
All right.
Professor Ben Bergen, professor in the Department of Cognitive Science, director of Language and Cognition Lab. This is Ben Bergen. Hi, Professor.
Hi there. Good morning.
I also want to mention really quickly that Ben has written a book that, Wendy, if I didn't already have a Christmas present for you, this would be your Christmas gift. Where the F did cussing come from? That is the book.
I don't like the word cussing, I got to be honest with you.
That's the word that offends you. The F part of the title you're fine with. It's the cussing part that you find offensive.
I like to say swearing, but University of California at San Diego Professor Ben Bergen will talk to us about this right now. I seem to swear a lot out there. I cuss a lot. I'll say it right now. Bill claims I swear more than anyone combined that he's ever met.
And I hang with pirates and truck drivers.
I can't do it on the radio, but swear words have been around for a long time, haven't they, Professor?
In English, they've been around for centuries, even for millennia, but not necessarily the same words. So your favorite F word wasn't particularly profane in Shakespeare's time. That's a relatively new invention.
Aha!
But is it said in any... Because I've read most of Shakespeare's plays, and I don't remember it being said.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of words that were, you know, common, but maybe didn't make their way up into these masterworks. But yeah, I mean, the strongest word in Shakespeare's day would have been swive, which we don't use anymore, but it's basically like the F word of his day.
I hope we dumped that.
I didn't, and I didn't know what to do.
You can't be saying swive on the radio. What does swive? what does the word that you just said mean?
It comes from an old root meaning literally to screw.
Oh.
Like the word. It's a modern English word, screw. It's sort of taken on a second meaning as well.
Could you say Mother Swiver?
No, you shut up.
I don't see why not.
All right, I'm going to start saying that.
All right, but there have been numerous studies that, and Bill has, I'll tell you Bill's study. If you swear you're dumb, you could use better words. Now, I have heard that people who swear are actually more intelligent. Your thoughts on this?
Well, there are only a couple studies on this, and they're usually conducted with the people that we have most easy access to, which is, you know, college psychology majors. But when you look at them and you ask them to produce as much profanity as they can in a short period of time, the people who are best able to produce profanity actually have the best vocabularies in the rest of the language as well.
Wow.
So that's not causal, right? We don't know that it's because of the profanity that it makes them better at language. Probably what's going on is that people who love language and all of its manifestations tend towards the spicier language as well as the more mundane.
Ben, here's what my parents taught my brother and myself, that it's really easy to just swear, to pull out a string of profanity, but the challenge is to get your point across by not swearing. You get that. I'm sure you've heard that before, right?
Sure. I think it's easy to do things that are routines. So if you have some pattern of swear words that you always say whenever you're frustrated or whenever you want to express delight, then yeah, sure, that's an easy thing to say. It's not easy to swear in a creative way, just in the same way that it's not easy to convince someone of something in a creative way. I think that all of language has these more routine and more creative dimensions to it.
Sure.
Now, I will explain that I don't just sit there and talk like the Osbournes, like, hey, what, you know, in common conversation. Honestly, the bulk of my swearing is when I am irritated, which seems to be a lot. But that's when I swear is when I get mad. You know, you stub your toe, you drop something, the kids aren't listening. That's when I go to the swear word.
It's pretty common for people to feel like profanity can be a sort of means of catharsis, right? You feel bad, you feel stressed, you feel angry, you feel anxious, and swearing alleviates that a little bit. We don't have much evidence about that. But the one thing that we do have evidence about, and this comes from a couple of studies from England, actually, is that swearing can alleviate pain. So what they did was they had people stick their hands into nearly freezing water and hold them there as long as they could. This is super painful, but it's not harmful. And half of the people were told to swear, and half of them were told not to swear. And the ones who were told to swear could actually hold their hands in there nearly twice as long.
But now, does that explain something, like you're kind of releasing some of that pain, like you're acknowledging it, like, oh, darn it. It just kind of, it does work as kind of a cathartic thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, here's the theory underlying it. It apparently releases something that we sort of know colloquially as a fight or flight reflex. It engages your body to prepare for some sort of threat. So your heart rate starts increasing, your blood pressure goes up, your skin starts sweating, and all of these things are associated with preparation for a threat. And you experience less pain when you're having this fight or flight reflex. And so that allows you to endure more punishment.
Ben, I'm deathly afraid of needles. I have a horrible fear of needles. And when I'm about to get a shot, I say to the doctor or nurse who's going to administer the shot, pick your favorite swear word, because I'm going to say it 1,000 times in the next 30 seconds. And that's the only thing that gets me through the shot.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you should be doing this research yourself.
So when was that discovered? When did somebody realize if I'm hammering in a nail and I hit my thumb, I want to yell out a swear word? Can we trace that back to a specific time?
Well, probably the first caveman.
Oh, yeah?
But you know, the experimental research on it is very new. This is only in the last 5 years. I think the first study on cold water immersion was from 2012. So, yeah, this is quite recent that we actually have science on this.
Why are most cuss words 4 letters?
That's the best question in history. Why is that?
Yeah, I actually have a chapter in the book on that. It's called What Makes a Four-Letter Word? If you look at English profanity, you do find that there are more four-letter words than you'd expect. But it's not about the letters. What's really going on is that we have a particular sound pattern that, for English speakers, sounds like a profane word. It's one syllable long, and it has consonants all over the place. In particular, it has these strong, hard stop consonants at the ends.
Sure.
Sounds like k and t and so on.
Yeah.
And English profane words tend to follow this pattern. And when new words are invented, when new words are added to the profane vocabulary, they also tend to follow this pattern, probably because they just sound to us profane.
Is there a part of the world where swearing is more prevalent and a part of the world where it's less prevalent?
My house.
Yeah, Wendy's house is ground zero.
Well, for sure. If you look across languages and cultures, you see that there are places where it's much more, there's much more of a belief that there are certain words that are just bad and you shouldn't use them in certain contexts, like over broadcast radio, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Like here, in fact, we have a relatively highly censored regime for public language. But by comparison, a place like Japan, there's really no concept whatsoever of words themselves being bad words. There's no word that would get bleeped on Japanese radio. You can insult people. You can call them a fool and tell them that their parents are like dogs. There are lots of ways to insult people.
Wow.
But the word dog wouldn't be a bad word. It's just the word dog. And the word fool isn't a bad word. So this idea that there are certain words that are inappropriate for certain circumstances is a cultural belief.
This is really fascinating to me. The book is Where the F Did Cussing Come From? And we are talking to Professor Ben Bergen. Book is available anywhere in particular? Amazon bookstores, your website?
Well, all the places that you acquire books. And just a small correction, the actual title, I know the title in the New York Times today was Where the F Did Cussing Come From? But the actual book title is What the F, What Swearing Reveals About Our Language, Our Brains, and Ourselves.
Okay.
All right. We're going to put you on hold for a minute, and we have many more questions for you that I will filter out the swear words while
sure.
talking to you. Hang on 1 second. It's Dr. Professor Ben Bergen, University of California at San Diego. WTF. Can I say that?
You can say that.
All right.
Sure.
312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. A word is just a word, unless there's a four-letter word, then it's...
Yeah. Then there's problems.
Yeah, it is.
Ben Bergen has written a book, What the F? What Swearing Reveals About Our Language, Our Brains, and Ourself.
All right, Professor Ben Bergen, University of California at San Diego. Here are some questions. I think listeners are scared to call in, but we get texts. See, no one... trusts themselves. You have to edit yourself.
Sure.
Many people have said that the F word is an acronym for something. I know there is a Van Halen album with the alleged acronym, and other people say it means something else. Any truth to that?
Unfortunately, there's not. I mean, these are really creative acronyms for unlawful carnal knowledge and so on. I think that's what you're... Yeah, no, not at all. This is a very, very old Indo-European root that goes back thousands and thousands of years. And actually, in the deep history before English even, it meant something like to hit or to strike, and then came to be used for a particular type of hitting or striking. It's meant a variety of things, but never has been an acronym.
All right, who says a bad word is a bad word, according to a texter from the 815 area code?
Who makes that decision?
Ooh, that's a great question. Well, of course, we have these social institutions. We're on broadcast radio, and so the FCC will fine your station if any of us says a particular word. Now, the problem is that they don't give you a list.
Right. There has never been a list. They refer to George Carlin's list of
the seven words you can't say.
But the FCC does not have a list.
That's right. So really, it's somewhere in the FCC's consciousness. They decide what they think is profane and what they think is obscene. So at least over broadcast radio and television, that's who decides. Movies, it's the MPAA. They decide what makes something R or PG, and of course they don't also have a list. So much of it is actually in the hands of invisible people who make decisions in boardrooms behind curtains.
Ben, I've noticed that every good swear word has like a watered down, almost generic version. Like if the word damn is too strong, somebody invented darn. So how did that become a thing that somebody said, well, these words are swear words and they're great, but we got to do like a kid's version of them all?
Yeah, there's actually a name for that kid's version. It's a minced oath, as though you were cutting the oath into little bits. The motivation seems pretty clear. I think that you want to express a strong emotion. That's what profanity is for. You were saying earlier that you use them for times when you're particularly frustrated or angry, and that's one kind of emotion. But also when you're elated, when you're say your baseball team locks up a division title. Then maybe you express that using profanity. So you want to use them to express emotion, but at the same time, there are all these social norms about, well, I can't say it here, I can't say it there, what if there's a kid around? And so the solution is you say a word that allows you to start with the same force and same power and emotional motivation as the word that you're talking about, but at the end, you kind of hide it a little bit.
That's for wussies. That's all I'm going to say. If you're going to say it, say it.
Come on.
So what are the consequences of swearing? I really do try to use them in a setting. We went to a wedding over the weekend. I didn't swear. I don't swear on the air. I never swore around my mom. I mean, there are places you don't swear, but do people still look at you poorly if you swear? Or is that changing?
Yeah, well, there are definitely social consequences, and I agree that it is changing, or at least the words are changing that people find most offensive. But they're not all negative consequences. So you're right that in certain circumstances, if you were to stand up at a wedding, for example, give a toast and it were full of profanity, it might not be taken exactly the right way by maybe even some of the older guests. But at the same time, there are lots of positive consequences. So people use profanity in informal situations to create social familiarity, to show their sort of ease and casual relations with other people, to be funny. I mean, a lot of humor is built around the use of breaking of taboos, and using profanity in public is a way to break taboos, and people think that that's funny. So there's lots of positive social consequences to it, too. Seems to depend a lot on the context, though.
So swear words pull out the strongest emotions in other people. This is in the book, and I have to ask you this question to explain this. Even stroke victims who have lost the ability to speak are still capable of spontaneously cursing. Hmm. How does that happen?
Yeah, well, it turns out that we usually think of language, for those of us who think about this kind of thing, we think about language as housed mostly in the left hemisphere of the brain, the left side of the brain. And that's why people who are really good with language and analytical are often described as left-brained. that's not, you know, there's a bunch of hooey in there, but language is mostly left lateralized. But the thing is, when you have, even when you have strokes that affect the left hemisphere of the brain, or even in certain cases, when you have the entire left hemisphere removed, patients still are able to swear spontaneously. And what that seems to mean is that there's a different source for these spontaneous, emotional, strong swears. And we've actually started to be able to localize where that is. It's an evolutionarily old part of the brain that is closely tied to emotion centers, and its job is to select actions and suppress inappropriate actions on the basis of those strong emotions. So it's basically like it's deciding, okay, I am feeling the strong emotion, what should I do about it? And so it's a completely different and, like I said, evolutionarily old part of the brain that produces these spontaneous swears.
Ben, doesn't that tie in directly to Tourette's syndrome, where the sufferer knows exactly what he or she isn't supposed to say, but because of the syndrome, they're saying it repeatedly?
That's exactly right. So in about 10% of cases of people with Tourette's syndrome, they have this the symptom called coprolalia, which is the uncontrollable production of swears or other taboo words.
Maybe that's what I have.
You have Tourette's syndrome,
yeah.
Wendy.
No,
you
I
do.
Don't have Tourette's, but, no? You know.
Coprolalia?
Yeah, if I could say it.
Francis Ford Coprolalia, that's what you have.
but you're right. You're exactly right. Tourette's syndrome affects that same evolutionarily old part of the brain, the basal ganglia. And it's exactly because people are having trouble suppressing these very strong emotional verbal responses that they come out in inappropriate places.
And just so you know, Tourette's syndrome, I believe, is called tic disorder now, and it's not just swearing.
Yeah,
other
people
could have
it.
Other things,
sure.
But it's like impulse control. They're unable to control it.
Yeah.
This is really fascinating to me. And Ben Bergen on the line with us. The name of the book again, why don't you say it? Make sure we'll say it right.
I'll say it. It's What the F, What Swearing Reveals About Our Language, Our Brains, and Ourselves.
And it's available where any books are sold, like Amazon, a bookstore, which there are still a few. And do you have a website, Ben?
You can just Google Ben Bergen, and I should be there. There are some other Ben Bergens, but they're all imitators.
Except no imitations. Get the original Ben Bergen. That's the way to do it.
And very quickly, before we let you go, we don't have a lot of time, but you have to help me. Is there any way I can stop swearing?
Well, do you want to?
No,
I don't know.
No.
Well, of course, people can learn to make decisions about the social context of their behavior. But in my talking with people, most of them feel that they find a lot of value in having a variety of different types of language that they can use for different purposes.
All right, I'll keep it at that.
All right.
I like you, Ben. You're my new best friend. So nice to talk to you, sir, and I look forward to reading the book. Again, it's Ben Bergen, University of California at San Diego, professor in the Department of Cognitive Science, director of Language and Cognition Lab, a linguist, and the book, What the F, What Swearing Reveals About Our Language, Our Brains, and Ourselves. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And thanks for teaching us swive, because I'm going to go to Shakespeare festivals and yell that out in the middle of them now.
You'll be very popular.
I know. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a quick break. And then more show. Steve has the news in just a moment. Bill and Wendy, WGN.